to introduce the alternative to the right-wing agenda, and to show that Russia, it's not only by war and xenophobia by immigrants, it's also by solidarity and opposition towards current government.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever participated? Because I, as I remember, it's also before the war in Ukraine. There are a lot of events, like demo, a big demo in Moscow at least, and maybe some actions to collect the money for some people who was in problem with the state. And I don't know, have you an opportunity to do? Because last year we also did some small demo here in Hamburg, and some leftist activists came, and we talked, and also brought some banners. But of course, here in Germany, that is not so piquant as in Russia. But I don't know. Did you do something before in Germany, or maybe you was a part somewhere in Russia when at 19th of January?
Unfortunately, no, because our organization had a really huge growth since last summer, and it was before. It was before the last summer, but I have the experience of organizing some events in Russia, and we organized these events in Novosibirsk, and partially I was a part of these events in Moscow also. And in Novosibirsk especially, where we had some problems with our right-wing forces, we had a really huge demonstration for Novosibirsk. It was maybe 150 people, and it was a really big amount of people for Novosibirsk for those times. And and our local right-wing nationalists are afraid of us because we opposed them really strong force. And we also think it's quite an important here in Germany, especially in the Russian-speaking community and the Ukrainian-speaking community, because of the polarization, also because of the growth of nationalism, like pro-Putin's nationalism, like AfD also. In North Rhine-Westphalia, there is an organization of it's called Russian-speaking Germans supporting AfD, or something like that. And we also try to oppose this organization because we do not support AfD, and we do not support Putin. We do not support this agenda, and we think those people have like a syndrome of white burger when they have some huge amount of money, especially huge amount of money for Russia and for East Europe, and they think, I live a great life, like great big egoist life, like like big rich boy, and I don't worry about other people who struggle against the war in Palestine, against the war in Sudan, in other African countries, in Russia also. Then they're not they don't worry about solidarity and the fate of other 6 or 7 billion people. And that's insane, but we try to oppose them because we think and we hope there is a way of making really equal, really rich, but rich for all society where everyone can get help, everyone can get a good job, good opportunities to have an education, to have a peaceful life in general. But they think it's quite a privilege. We don't think so, and that's why we oppose them.
Okay. Who is we? So let's talk about this organization, post-Soviet left. I'm sure that you don't need to tell some names or some things which could maybe useful for some right-wing groups, any case, so it's could be great to know a little bit more. Why post-Soviet actually? Why not migrants or Russians or Ukrainians? I don't know who else in your group. And why did you start? And I was also recently, it was already in November, this forum in Köln. And maybe it's also will be a different question. But in any case, I was very interested, and I also came to this forum, and I would like also to talk a little bit about this. But let's start from the beginning. Who is this post-Soviet left? Who is in Germany?
So I think that our organization is an organization of Russian left immigrants, Ukrainian left immigrants also. It's an organization of the people who had who have some post-Soviet origins and live here and want to be a part of the struggle of the working class and struggle for the international solidarity in Eastern European countries like Russia, Ukraine, Belarus. We also have some Belarusian comrades living in Poland, and we try to make a united organization because we think that splitted organizations like Russian left organization in the exile, Ukrainian left organization in exile, and so on, it's just not of the way of the deciding of the solving our problems, because some Russian leftists may think that their problems are really important, and all of the leftists in all of the world should fight the Russian governments. Ukrainian leftists can also think like that, and we try to collaborate and split the people from different nations because of the lack of the information. I mean, really left information, not loyalist information, in the East European left community, because of the conflict of interest. And we try to handle it. Make it in the new level where we have common interests, like ending of the war, like ending of our nationalist regimes and so on. And I think it's kind of good way because I meet a really big amount of people who want to join us, who want to work with us, even with other positions. I mean, I think it's kind of good way. Our organization was also merged like a response to the crisis of the leftist immigration in the European Union, because me especially personally, when I saw some left initiatives here in Germany, in France also, it was there were some kind of depressed initiatives. I came to the people and they said me, "That's nothing we can do. That's nothing we can handle it. That all is gone," and so on and so on. And me personally, with my comrades, we decided to work with our own organization because it's kind of important. And I think that's kind of successful way because I really see how we spreading towards the other European Union countries. We now have an department in France, in Paris. We also try to organize some departments in Poland, in different cities. And in Balkan countries also. We also think having an organization with strong ties between each other and between different countries in exile, like European countries, like Balkan countries, like maybe also American countries, like USA and Argentina. It's kind of important because not all of the Russian immigrants, not all of the Ukrainian immigrants live only in the European Union, or not only Russian avoiders live in Germany. They're living in Kazakhstan also. They're living in Serbia, in Georgia, and so on. And we try to be a voice of the majority of people who don't want to go to the war, who don't want to live in the unequal society, who want to have a really big opportunities to the living, to the finding a good job, housing, and so on. And I think it's kind of important the situations of the situation with the crisis of the Russian liberal opposition, because
before you come into liberal opposition, I would like to ask, I see you have a big plan, so like universal almost, but why post-Soviet? So a lot of people kind of could be critical about this post-Soviet identity. I see your hand, Pavel, but 1 second, please. Because how critical you understand this post-Soviet identity, because it's also not just this may be, image who has some leftists here, who have some leftists here, but also... dissident movement, Stalinist regime, and how understand you this post-Soviet identity?
I can answer if Pavel allows me.
Okay, but stop. Maybe Pavel first because he had a hand.
Okay.
Okay, so I just wanted to elaborate a little bit about this idea. So whether it's important to work together or in separate like entities divided by nations, because there is always this idea that the Russian people do not have any right to speak about the politics in Ukraine, and the Ukrainians don't have any right to speak about the politics. Actually, they have in this context, in the current context, because there is a Russian war of aggression. But in a sense of, if we are speaking about left politics, and if we are talking about nations, which is a kind of social construct that we want to abolish. We want to abolish borders because borders is a system of control. So, of control of the working class. And we want to unite as a working class and not separate us, each other, by the national, by some national identity. So, Why shouldn't we then work together, Ukrainians and Russians? And you know, in the left spectrum, there is already a quite toxic relation between different groups and different people. And then, on top of that, why should we add this toxic relation between nations instead of start talking together? And if we, the post-Soviet left was one of the organizers of the forum in Köln, and many Ukrainians were also present. And there was a lot of hot discussion about whether to support Ukraine with arms supplies or not. And there was certainly a split in the opinion about whether to do it or not. But I imagine that the situation would be much more worse if there were no Ukrainians present. But because imagine Russians talking about this question and bashing each other with I don't know, some arguments without the presence of Ukrainians. That would be like, it's a nonsensical situation. While because Ukrainians were present, there was some representation. Okay, some Ukrainians told, okay, we need armed support, and others told we don't need. But it was a more complete discussion, and we were the most important part were that we were talking to each other, and the same for an organization. I mean, if we are building an international organization, we need to be all the nation present in this organization, and this mutual talk and dialogue, I think it is a big enrichment for the working class movement, and it's, I think it has a lot more, it's better than organizations divided by nations.
Oh, okay, I can react. Okay, I am for the dialogue. I'm for conversation, to talk to each other, to have a culture of kind of, I'll say, strike. But still, it's not the answer to the question about why post-Soviet, because post-Soviet have this kind of very specific agenda of an identity also. So it's kind of post-imperial identity where the people kind of don't talk about their nationalities, but they also, because Soviet is also an identity, it's also a identity of some former country.
I think we should make clear at first that we don't support any imperial project. So the naming is not because of we defend some a big union led by Russia, for example, but so that there to get away with this misunderstanding, it's rather because there are some reality, some common history, we can like it or not. But maybe about this history, the historian should speak.
Okay, but before we, I give the word.
Can I also it?
Alexander, yes, I just want to make for our listeners, because there is also this question in post-colonies countries, in other kind of imperial situations. That's why, if we're thinking about it, Soviet Union was a kind of an empire. That means that we have to compare with other empires of this time, and that's why I think it's still for me the question. But maybe Alexander, your answer also.
The post-Soviet left, it's kind of sustainable established term because of there is a post-Soviet area, and there is no other good words to describe it, because it's not a simple Eastern Europe, because Eastern Europe it's also Poland, Hungary, Romania, and so on. And if we speak like Russian speaking, it's not correct, because it excludes the really big amount of people who speaks Ukrainian, and nothing more like Ukrainian, than Ukrainian. Sorry. We want to try collect those people because we have similar problems, we think that post-Soviet period of our of history of our nations of our people it's not ended, because we have some similar problems between Russia and Ukraine and Belarus and Kazakhstan also, with authoritarianism, with violation of working class rights, violation of human rights, of rights of avoiders, of rights of deserters, and so on. And we also think that will be that Soviet Union. It's like my personal belief, as a man who is a historian and who specializes in the Soviet history. Soviet Union had not only imperial praxis but also decolonial praxis, and it's kind of mainstream to enlighten only one of the aspects of the Soviet problem. And we have successful experience of our comrades in Kyrgyzstan, Kyrgyzots, I mean. They try to rethink their past experience or more in the more equal way, in the more inclusive way. And they try to also show that Soviet experience wasn't not only the Stalinist experience, but also a dissident's experience, 60-year experience also, like people who fight opposing the Soviet bureaucracy and so on. And it's kind of difficult to have another tradition by describing any other word. And we think it's kind of a question of stereotypes also, because Russia tries to privatize the Soviet agenda, the Soviet image in the history, because they have a really big profit of it. They try to use it in the external affairs, also working with some conservative left parties, like maybe Bundesarbeiterwagenknecht, I think it's kind of important for now to show there is a really big difference between the socialist past and between current situation. We have different beliefs, different thoughts about the socialist past. The experience of so-called real socialism in the USSR, but those those subjects are not equal. And it's kind of important for today because Putin and the Russian government try to also make a strong tie with any social in the East Europe and his person. And we try to break this tie, we try to break this link because it's kind of obvious for us because Putin is a right-wing dictator and we do not support him.
Okay, maybe.
But I'd like to addition that it doesn't mean there we think only Soviet way. We respect Western Marxist agenda, post-Marxist agenda. I also personally love Louis Althusser's books. Michel Foucault writings and so on, and we ideologically we tried to make a new socialist agenda with collecting all of the radical but still modern traditions like Louis Althusser, like other other authors, because the global left movement is also in the crisis situation, and there is a really big crisis of electoral left movements, and we also try to find the way of avoiding these problems. And solving these problems, of course.
Okay, but I understand, but still, I think here in the Western, some people still think very, also in Russia, of course, it's kind of also mainstream, very nostalgic about Soviet Union. And that's why I think if you, maybe it's my kind of... how to say Wunsch, German.
Wish.
Yes, that any organization who will work with this kind of post-Soviet perspectives have to make a very strong statement. Why they choose this connection, and then how critical they are about this, and maybe still do a lot of work for their own members, but also from for the other people, to make this critical perspective, because how to understand this experience? What does means post-Soviet? Because I'm kind of understand really a lot about post-colonial perspectives, and a lot of people, there is a kind of fight between to say that post-colonial means just the date of abolition, kind of the date of anti-colonial struggle, and then the many colonies get their kind of freedom from colonizers, or it's about the experience, what means to be post-colonial, to be free but still be connected to former metropolis, and this kind of all economical ties and so on. That's why I think it's could be quite the same situation in post-socialist or post-communist space, but of course with their own specificity. And to talk about this is extremely important from my perspective, and to make it clear that, still thinking that maybe workers' right and socialism could exist, but in other way. But maybe we will stop discussion about post-Soviet and let's come to this forum. And why you think it's important to organized this kind of forums? Who was there? And maybe a few words about my agenda. Who would like to talk? Pavel shows on Alexander, but maybe you could also say both. But let's start from Alexander. I'm not.
Do you mean the forum in Cologne?
Yes.
In the November. Yes. We organized this forum to have the connections between different types of leftists and to discuss the strategy of the solving our crisis of solving our problems with struggling against Russian authoritarianism, Russian suppressive regime, and we collected a lot of people, more than 70 people have come to the forum, and we have also a lot of supporters who didn't participate and who haven't the opportunity to come to the forum, but we still have the contacts with them, and we think that forum shows the different opinions, and I think personally that forum shows the division between two main groups of Russian leftists, especially people who want to organize and unite with other comrades who are struggling against their own governments and try to make a global agenda, and our people who want to think only Russian problems, of Russian problems, and who want to think only of problems with the war. And I think that's kind of natural division, because left movements was always divided by different types of opinions, by different types of questions, and it's kind of normal. And moreover, I think it's kind of successful, because 10 years ago, people was divided by Stalin or Trotsky or Foucault or I don't know, Bakunin or other indoctrinated authors, and now people are divided by really actual questions. I think it's kind of success because it's kind of difficult to work in a modern politics with old. Moreover, for very inactual. It's not more actual questions like industrialization of the USSR. It's very actual question in the 21st century. It's kind of sarcasm. So, I think the forum shows this kind of division, and it also shows the solidarity despite of the division, because a lot of people, despite of the difference in the opinions, they organized some projects with helping the people who has some problems with the Russian authorities, who has some problems with escaping Russia. And I think it's kind of good. I also think that this event had some success. Because we started to talk about really actual problems despite of our opinions. And I also personally think that these forums also showed the incapability of so-called defenders because they also they only try to find the external allies, like I don't know, maybe Putin's oligarchy, like Mishustin, like far right liberals like Nevzorov and so on, to fight against the Russian regime. But it's kind of nonsense, because almost always we had some problems with a really big lack of the support of the opposition, because Russian people have really important but kind of sarcastic questions: who else but not Putin? And I think we should not ignore this question. We should answer this question, because I can understand those people, because when they had to choose between Putin and I don't know, Ukrainian occupational governments or Western occupational governments, it's kind of natural that they choose nothing of them, and they avoid the politics in general. And I think we should involve those people to the politics. We should show them there is an alternative, there is a socialist way of ending the war in the both sides, because Ukrainian people, our Ukrainian comrades, are also struggling their governments, because it violates human rights, labor rights also, and it's kind of a general problem in the post-Soviet area. If we look at the countries that are not involved to the war directly or not directly, like Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, like Kyrgyzstan, they also have the same problems, like presidents, strong presidents, authority with some suppressions against human rights activists, against working class activists, against civil rights writers, against journalists, and so on. And discussion about the question of the what it means to be post-Soviet, I think it's also about the global agenda, because the 21st century, it's also about the collapse of the authoritarian Marxism-Leninism. And the leftist all of the world, I think and I believe and I hope we will found the way of solving this problem, because problems of the past socialism wasn't simple problems, weren't problems of bad personalities like Stalin or Trotsky. Those problems were by a great structure, like bureaucracy, like industrial way of thinking, like industrial way of production, and so on. And we also think there is no, unfortunately, but we try to find with our Russian comrades, with our Ukrainian comrades, with our German comrades, French comrades, and so on. We try to find the way of solving this problem in the more democratic and inclusive way, because we think that only democratic socialism, but democratic socialism in real meaning, in the meaning of non-class society, in the meaning of a society without any bourgeoisie, without any unequal employment, without unequal access to the to the not only production process, but only also for the government process. We think that's only really big, serious democratic and socialist changes could stop this situation. And we think and we see that a lot of people in Russia and Ukraine, maybe sometimes unconsciously, but they support this agenda. They think that it's kind of real way. Moreover, even right-wing activists, like activists in the Ukrainian army, in Russian army, they have far away agenda. But even they think about struggling against oligarchs. Maybe not all of them. Maybe a couple of them. But even in these circles, there is a demand of the socialist agenda, and we think that providing the socialist agenda, not only national socialist agenda, national like Russian socialist agenda or German socialist agenda, because in the European politics there is also way of crisis like that. Because if you read the program of typical, even radical left party in the Germany or in France, you will see the exiting of European Union and NATO. So, okay, where we had an exit, and what you should do? Why the people should support them? There is no answer, unfortunately. But we try to find it. It's kind of difficult question. It's kind of difficult way, but we believe that unfortunately, if we don't see the right-wing agenda as a possible agenda, it's the only way to solve those problems. And we are afraid that the war in the Eastern Europe and the war in the Palestine will be a more global conflict between Russia and China and United States and European Union because of the growing polarization and growing nationalism.
Okay. It was not quite what I think we will discuss about this forum, but still good. Let's have it how you told us now, because I thought that you will talk a little bit closer to what happens on the forum, but yeah, maybe next time. Before, because we're already talking more than one hour, and you talked also about deserters. So for us on Tamas.radio, it's a very important topic. We did already a few programs, a few stories about deserters, Denkmal, so the monument of deserters. What is your kind of way to talk about deserters, and also, as I understand, you're working together, Russians and Ukrainians, and there is also a question of political correctness, who could represent the other, and how you understand this problem. So first of all, what you do about deserters, and how you understand this kind of question of political correctness. Do you want Pavel answer, or Alexander will start again?
I would like to start with the very basic idea that a deserter is a very positive impact on the war or the ending of a war, because You know, each deserter means some demoralization in the army, and if we get a bunch of people, if we get 10 or 20 or 100 people already deserting, then it probably means that there is already a big network behind that, because they will have some important people in the army who allow that and who are not supporting the politics of, let's say, Putin's aggression. And I think that supporting those is a very important thing. And we should also here in Europe push for that, because I think there is a lack of understanding among the mainstream politics that about the importance of supporting deserters, because probably they are treated as people who participated in the combat and who also committed some crimes. But I think we should not leave out the other aspect that, probably there are a lot of people who are mobilized by the force, and then or they rethink their position because they start to understand that they are fighting for a politic who do not represent their lives, their views, who they're fighting because government because some people, some oligarchs want to solve their own problems. So I think it should be we should be more we should be louder speaking about this, so that also in the European Union there is a consensus that helping those deserters and that giving them easy entry into the European Union because they are persecuted by the government, by the Russian government, for example, it's a very important thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly did you do?
I will. I think Alexander will can talk more about this.
We have 6 deserters escaped to Russia. They came to the to the France, and we have also some deserters in Germany, Russian deserters. It's kind of difficult to say more about them because a lot of the information is some kind of private because of the safety issues. But we have organized some actions with them in 21st December. In Paris, and we also highlighted this topic in Cologne in the same day. We also try to highlight this topic in other actions. So, for example, yesterday there were an action also in Cologne. About the distribution of rights of people who don't want to go to the war, and we also tried to represent this subject. As about of the problems of the representation of the deserters, there is a problem with unequalizing the deserters, especially when we say something about Russian deserters or I don't know, deserters from the eastern Ukraine, from the occupied territories, those people in the European Union met a really support minimum in the speeches of the people, but it's kind of difficult also to seek asylum, seek for other legal staying in the Germany or in France, or in other European country. But if we look about if we look to the problems of the deserters from the Ukrainian side, it's kind of opposite situation because in the best case, the situation the people don't want to see the situation, and in the worst case. They directly some people directly say that they should go to the war, be meet for the war, and so on and so on. And we try to break this unequalization because we think that any life of any man or women could be defended by the given the asylum, by the given opportunities to find a job here, and so on. And it's kind of difficult today to give this agenda into some media, because Russian opposition media they only see the one side. The Russian state government's media, they only see the side of the Ukrainian avoiders and their deserters because they have some profit of enlightenment. And in our case, some Ukrainian government's circles having profits of showing that, look, Russia have a really big amount of deserters and so on, and it's kind of difficult to break this dichotomy, but we try to make it, and we also try to have our own resources, our own journalist connections, because we try to show that situation has more than one side, and there is no war of the white or black side. Is unfortunately, there is a war of gray side, or even brown side, and it's kind of difficult. But I think it's not impossible because we have a growth of people who support us. We have. Also, some support in France parliaments, like New Front Populaire, like organizations, non parliaments organizations, and we try to find the same. Supporters in the Germany, but it's kind of difficult because left parties in the parliament are divided by the questions of the war, by the questions of the migration, and so on. And it's kind of easier to fight against each other, but not finding the real way out of this situation. But we try to handle it. I think. It's not impossible because the people, especially Russian and Ukrainian deserters and avoiders and people who
objectors.
Are refugees, they join us because they see that there is a place, there is an organization who support them, and I think maybe in year or 2 years we will make a more strong infrastructure with it, and we will make a split between the those stereotypes and make an independent agenda more successfully.
Okay, but because we are talking for a long time, and I remember you have to go to your event, maybe before we will end to talk with you, Alexander, you can say how the listeners could find your media or more information if they want to contact you and to ask some questions or maybe to join you.
We have an Instagram account and Telegram account. We have two Telegram accounts in Russian and in English. With this information, it's called Post-Soviet Left. You can type it without any spaces, Post-Soviet Left. And we also have our own site, postsovietleft.org. And that we try to publish some news there. Unfortunately, not all of the news are public. Not all of the information is open to the public access. But we try to highlight more and more problems, more and more cases that with those we work in. And I think we also try later to start our own YouTube channel, because it's kind of difficult today, and it's kind of important today to have a really independent agenda and provide it to the masses, to the people in the European Union, in Russia and Ukraine also. I don't know about the exact format of the YouTube channel, but I think that's 100% that we will have it in Russian. I'm not sure about the English, because our forces are limited for now, but we will also think about it.
Okay. Good. Then at this point, we will say bye-bye to you. And thank you very much for the conversation. But we still have a Pavel here, and we will continue maybe after the short musical break. Okay, Pavel. Now we're sitting together without Alexander. And we would like talk with you about your migrant collective, who was organized here in Hamburg, as I understand. And let's talk about this. Could you please tell us a few words about this collective?
Yes, it's not only in Hamburg, but the idea is to have an organization which is active in Germany. There is also some people interested in starting in France and in Netherlands. Someone wrote us as well. And I probably explain how it started, because at the beginning there was this abstract idea of that, you know, migrants are often overexploited because they are, it's a vulnerable group, and we wanted to make some research and bring it like to the people, like to help how they can defend themselves in labor conflicts. But then there was the forum in Köln where the idea started to take some shape, because there was this hot discussion about whether to support Ukraine or not, and so on. And there was an elephant in the room, because even if we come to a consensus, to a point, nobody will listen to us, And why? Yeah, because we are nobody, because we don't have a strong movement behind us, and we don't have some infrastructure. So here and then, during like some private talks, someone dropped, yeah, we don't have a political